Hello, welcome to New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
If you're looking for a podcast on traditional American folk magic, we hope you'll stay tuned.
In this episode, Corey and I discuss the ins and outs of broom closets, and in the second half, we'll have an interview with Sarah Lawless, the Witch of Forest Grove.
So sit back, pour yourself a cup of something good, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have Celtic roots? Are your ancestors from Ireland or Scotland or Wales? From Cornwall, Brittany, the Isle of Man or Gaul? Do you love stories and tales? Ancient myths, legends and folklore of the Celtic peoples? Do you want to hear more about King Arthur, Gwydion, Taliesin, Cuchulain, wild magic and the realms of the Otherworld? Do you want to hear about the old gods, druids and fairies in a way that they're not just dusty, dry words on a page? Then you need the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back. This is episode 2, and like we said earlier, we'll be discussing broom closets and your relationship to them. And ours.
So, okay, Lane, I think we should start by talking about each of our positions.
Yes.
In regards to broom closet. Where do you stand on the broom closet issue?
I'm in, unfortunately. I wish I could be more out, but I'm not. Like I said in my history in the first episode, I was, raised Christian. And so, obviously, my mom still is. My dad would be, but, he died, so... Sadness, but at least he knows now wherever he is.
Well, that's good. Positive is a bright side to that, I guess.
Who knows how he'd feel about that? My mom does not know. She had some inklings in high school, but I kind of tried to keep it more under wraps than when I sort of gauged how her reaction would be, and it was not good. So.
But now in high school, you were not out with your family, but you were a little more out in school, correct?
Yes, which was kind of dangerous growing up in a small town. I went to high school with, extended family and cousins and everything. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of my family that lives in my hometown. It definitely could have gotten back. And I actually, to this day, still worry about it. I mean, now that I'm an adult and I'm out of the house, it's a little bit easier to deal with.
So why do you think you want to stay in the broom closet with your family? What is it that compels you to stay in? Is it fear of the trouble it would cause them, or is it more of a personal fear of you don't want to lose a connection to them?
Yeah, my mom would not take it very well. She doesn't really understand, and I've even tried to explain it to her several times because she knows that a friend of mine is. Mm-hmm. She didn't like me hanging out with her, and she thought she was a bad influence, and she's fine with her now. I think one should never underestimate the power of denial. She can push things back a little bit. She can she can block. So my friend in high school was out. Her parents knew about it. Her dad was very supportive. We would come over and have ritual or do something. Even just to spend the night and watch cheesy movies. And mm-hmm. He'd be like, "Oh, the coven's here." He was a good influence, or a positive in our mm-hmm. lives then. And I think that this friend had sent me a card at one point for Yule or Christmas, and it said like Merry Christmas, but then it said Blessed Be, and my mom, that set off a bell, and mm-hmm. she said, "Oh, well, that's a witch thing to say, and why would she say that?" And I said, "Well, this person is mm-hmm. a witch," and there was crying, and there was there was not speaking to me for days, and I think, I wasn't allowed to watch Buffy for a little while.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a little crazy.
That's intense. Now, but she had some experience with occult things in her youth, hadn't she?
I'm not sure about that, a teeny bit. She had tarot cards at one point, and she had a few books on divination mm-hmm. and just the occult in general. Mm-hmm. And she gave them to me. It's like, "Oh, I thought you'd like them."
That's odd.
She gives me mixed signals all the time. It's really strange.
Right. And she clearly knows, Blessed Be is associated right. with this thing.
But I think that's a general knowledge type of thing, though, for an educated person, yeah, okay. I would say.
I would give you that. I know a lot of people who, I mean, even if you use the word Wiccan around them, no clue what that right. means.
Yeah, she definitely does.
Yeah.
But yeah, she does give me mixed signals. Like, you know, sometimes she'll say something like, you know, very Jesus-centered and very, what I would say, you know, just a very Christian way to say something. Mm-hmm. And then some days, you know, we'll be driving and at night she'll say, oh, look at the moon. It's so beautiful. And it just seems...
Mm-hmm. Where she's, it's almost like she's saying, look how beautiful she is up
there. Yeah, it's almost reverential.
Yeah.
So it's, growing up with that was hard because I constantly wanted to tell her. I don't like lying to my mother.
Right.
Well, I'll take that back. I never lie to her. I never say, oh, I'm a Christian. She knows I'm not a Christian. I just never... fill in the blank, this is what I am. I just say what I'm not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take that however you will.
Obfuscation.
Exactly.
The fun game you play at Thanksgiving. So your fear of the consequences is really more a fear of losing that connection to her, probably.
Right, especially because in high school, we were at each other's throats constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, we did not get along. And then I moved out, and it got a lot better between us. And especially since my dad died. I think, you know, we've gotten even closer just because, mm-hmm. well, obviously.
Do you think that will enable you to ever be able to be open with her? Or do you think this is something that will always be for you and not for her?
I don't know. I'm hoping I can tell her one day, simply because when I have children, I can see things getting a whole lot more complicated,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure you know about and we'll talk about. But my husband isn't pagan, but he's not a Christian either. He's more...
kind of agnostic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's sort of like, I know something's there. I don't really feel the need to worship anything, though. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, that's cool.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah. So, but, you know, that doesn't, we're not going to be raising our child as a Christian, though.
Right.
I'll probably tell him, you know, like, or him or her, you know, this is what we believe, this is what these people believe, you know, mm-hmm. try to educate him about a bunch of things because, you know, I sort of got into that, like, I studied a lot of, well, not a lot, but some Hinduism and mm-hmm. even Catholicism and, you know, just a few different things in high school. I felt better knowing I was making an educated choice rather than just, mm-hmm. oh, this feels right. Which it does. You know, it's always felt right for me.
Right.
But it's like we're talking about the first episode where I'm more intuitive. Right. But I also wanted to make, you know, an educated decision.
Right.
About it.
Well, right, because so. You don't want to eat nothing but vanilla at Baskin-Robbins and miss out on the Rocky Road. You got to try all 31 flavors first.
Exactly.
Yes, no, I feel you on that. So. Do you think that you would ever be open with other members of your family? I know you have some siblings. Would you ever be open with
probably.
Them?
They'll probably know once they get older and they can understand it more. But, like, any extended family? No. Never. Simply because we don't really talk to my mother's family that much. And then my dad's side is... extremely conservative to the point where, you know, I got in trouble for having beer at my wedding.
Oh, good. All right. What about, do you remember, other than the girls that you were working with in high school, who was the first person you came out of the broom closet to?
Oh, Lord.
Do you remember?
I don't. I think because my group of friends was so intertwined, it sort of was just gradual knowledge, mm-hmm. you know, that people in our friend group, like, you know, outer group that you kind of have in high school
right.
just started to know, like, oh, you know, those girls, they're getting into witchcraft.
Right.
And of course, you know, everybody said, oh, it's just like, I have a, you know, a very dear friend who has an older sister who, you know, told her, oh, well, it's just a phase you guys are going through. You'll get over it.
Right.
And, you know, we're proud to say we have not gotten over it yet.
Fantastic. No, so everybody wasn't just sitting around the cafeteria going, oh, where's Jimmy today? Oh, he's a toad. I bet it was Lane and her buddies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea who I came out to.
Well, I know that the guy that we wound up getting introduced through sort of outed you to everyone involved with that production at one point, didn't
they? Yeah, the play that we talked about in the first episode. We went out to dinner and, you know, joked around and had some fun. And, yeah, I felt it was very inappropriate and it really hurt. It hurt our friendship. You know, we don't speak anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, to be fair, he wasn't the most reverential of people when it came to his relationships with others. And I say that having worked with him in that production as well. But, yeah, I remember him kind of outing you.
And yeah, at the dinner table.
Yeah, at the dinner table in front of everyone else.
When it wouldn't have been a huge deal since I probably would have told someone had they asked, but no one had asked. It wasn't really a piece of information that needed to be told.
Yeah.
It was almost like he said it just to make me uncomfortable.
Well, it was like, I think it sounded like the conversation had turned away from him and he needed something to raise the temperature of the room a little bit, and that was convenient.
Sounds like it.
It's really disappointing.
Yeah.
It worked out okay. I mean, it was one of those things where he was like, well, hey, don't you cast spells and worship the devil and blah, blah. I don't think he said worship the devil, but it was kind of on that vein of, you know, just enough information to be a little dangerous in how he presents it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was one of those things where everybody kind of looks at you and I have to jump in there and be like, yo, me too. It's all good.
God, that was like the best feeling, though, like that I had some support at the table because, you know, going through life here in the South, you really don't have that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if it's just one of you, it's really easy to get the lynch mob going. But with two of you, they think you might fight back. So.
Right.
Like, oh, they've got claws. They can scratch. So.
Well, you know, you're kind of conditioned, mm-hmm. especially when you start practicing in high school, that people are going to react badly.
Mm-hmm.
So, or react negatively, I should say.
Well, I wonder then with that, because I've felt that way at times too, where mm-hmm. I'm afraid, you know, if I'm too open, that there will be some reaction to that. But then, I don't know if she's an author, but she's a pagan figurehead. She runs the Witch's Voice, Ren Walker. And she talks about how she and her partner on the Witch's Fox, when they go into a new situation, they have learned they simply don't expect prejudice, and therefore they encounter very little of it.
That's a very good point. Mm-hmm. It's almost like spellcasting in general. You know, mm-hmm. if you think about it a lot, it's going to manifest itself. Mm-hmm. So stop thinking that you're going to be persecuted all the time.
Being oppressed and being oppressed, yeah.
And, you know, you won't be. So that is a very good point.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I definitely think that knowing our regional situation, mm-hmm. that there is more of a chance we will react badly.
Right.
I certainly remember on my college campus manning our student pagan organization table.
Yeah.
Well, we were, I don't know if we were the first group, but we were one of the most public groups at the time. I was only with them for a year because they got a little too public in mm-hmm. some ways. And also, they were, again, constantly wandering that path, trying to find where I belong, looking for my rocky road. So I would man that, and I actually had several people, I think, from the Student Baptist organization. And this is not bashing Baptist, it just happened to be that's where I think they were from, because their table was near ours. came over and started being not abusive, but very disrespectful.
Really? Like, what were they saying?
Very disrespectful. They would ask questions like, do you realize that you're worshiping demons?
Oh, I've definitely had that.
Are you aware you're going to hell? You know, don't you want to go to heaven? Things like, and I understand, you know, that came from a place of deep concern.
Mm-hmm.
I can respect that. And maybe that's me being a little too tolerant because I'm surrounded by that constantly. But at the same time, it was very off-putting at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, I don't need this from any of you. I'm just here to hand out flyers and candy. Thanks.
Yeah. It really bothers me.
It's a little disgusting. And I mean, I understand there is, you know, biblically there's the Great Commission that comes, I think, at the end of Matthew, where it's go forth and make disciples of all nations. And I get that. That's part of the rhetoric that they are trained in, and it's what they feel they're commanded to do. So I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I feel that there's an awful lot of misinterpretation and an awful lot of sort of abuse of that.
Saying, you know, oh, If you don't accept Jesus into your heart, then you're going to burn in hellfire.
Somewhere in this world, I am on video in one of those situations where they were recording interviews in downtown. It was safe to say the name of where we are. In downtown somewhere. The South. We'll just say in the South because it doesn't need that context. And they were recording interviews with people about, like, are you going to heaven? And, you know, what do you believe? And da da da. And, like, basically it was their way of wrangling you into a conversation so they could then be like, you know, you're going to hell, and here's the reason why. And you know, here's what Jesus wants from you. Do you want Jesus? To be fair, I was not safe to drive at that point. So we were walking. That's why we were walking. And I gave him a lot of really straight answers. and the nice thing about it was that having spent so much time with my wife, I go to church with my wife every week. It's just part of the marriage that mm-hmm. I'm in. And you know, there's no pressure from them to convert me so far, thankfully.
Yeah.
And I'm okay kind of, you know, just being there and learning the culture of it. And the nice thing about it is I've learned a lot about the Bible and a lot of Bible passages.
Right, so you can back up your own.
Yeah, so I was able to, you know, pretty much come back out there and be like, well, it says this in Romans, and, you know, and, you know, and then there's the whole controversy over, you know, is, I think they were asking something about, you know, like I mentioned about magical practices, and so I brought up the, you know, the Nephilim of Genesis and the angels breeding with mankind to create these magical, you know, traditions. And it's like, and then there's the book of Enoch, and they're like, oh, the book of Enoch's not canon. It's like, well, but then the epistle of Jude has this in there, which is from the book of Enoch. Hmm. And it was really fun.
Yeah.
So somewhere I'm being used as a propaganda tool to tell people, yes, you can be educated and still go to hell. And I'm kind of proud of that. It's awesome.
So, okay, you, mm-hmm. your turn. Okay. Are you in or out?
I'm primarily out. It's a fine line. I am out to almost anybody who wants to know. Mm-hmm. I'm not out to certain people. My in-laws, for example, it would sort of break their hearts to know exactly the nature of my game, as it were. Mm-hmm. And so there's no reason for me to sit there and be like, hey, just in case y'all didn't know, I'm a witch.
Right, but if they ever sat down and asked you, mm-hmm. okay, you know, Corey, we've become really concerned mm-hmm. with your soul, you know, what do you really believe? Would you tell them the truth?
I probably would. I would probably try to couch it in some fairly soft terms. Mm-hmm. I would probably be using words like pantheism and animism, maybe a bit of deism. I would be sort of like structuring it from those perspectives, and maybe mentioning the P word, pagan. But I don't know if I would go so far as to just sit there and be like, I'm a witch and I do hexes. That's probably, it's more information than they need to be comfortable.
Right.
But with them, they know, I'm 99% sure they know that I am, well, they know for sure I'm not Christian. They know that. They had a talk with my wife before we got married, and they said they love me, they think I'm wonderful, they wish I was a Christian. Mm-hmm. But then they knew that even without ever seeing my behavior in church.
Right.
You know, it's just, and that's fine. And they're wonderful. I don't want to give any impressions that they're not. They have been just marvelous people to me, and I love them incredibly dearly. But they both have seen... there's no way they have missed the stuff that is in my house, that you know, books that say witchcraft on them, or, you know, hoodoo root work herb magic, you know, there's no way they've missed it. I've seen them look at it, and apparently my wife has seen her father pick up and kind of thumb through some of this stuff. They know, and they are still pretty cool with me. And actually, I remember when I was in, can I say that I was in Prague?
Sure.
Okay. We have to be a bit obfuscatory. Obfuscatory?
I don't know.
We have to make things dark and shady a bit because we're trying not to let on too much about ourselves because at least one of us is still in the
room. Right, yeah.
But my wife and I lived in Prague for a while, and her parents came to visit us while we were over there, and we were attending a little tiny, tiny church there that met in a room of a YMCA because... Europe, not a Christian place. Uh-huh. Just lots of Christian history, not Christian right now. Just that's not religious, really. Very non-religious. So they were meeting in this little YMCA, and her parents came to visit us, and they came to church with us and everything. And her dad and I were out in the hallway at one point, and he actually came up to me, and he gave me a big hug, and he said, I just want you to know I'm so thankful that you don't stand in Kate's way on these things, and that we really love you, and we love having you in our family, and we know that you would never do anything to endanger her soul, basically.
Right.
So what was this even remotely about the original question, or have
that's
I just
okay. No, that's,
wandered?
That's good though. That's very sweet of them.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, because they're so actively involved in the church.
Oh yes. Yes. Very, very active.
So going back to your son.
Yes.
So even though he's going to church and he's being, mm-hmm. you know, educated in that. How are you, like, or if you are at all, how are you, you know, educating him about yours, you know? Obviously, he's too young now.
Right. Right now, he it's all just noise, background noise,
right.
Whatever's going on. And that counts for her church as well as, you know, my, we'll get to this topic in a minute, but as well as my faith practices or magical practices, mm-hmm. sort of a difference, but, and we could probably do a whole nother show about, you know, magical parenting and right. the relationships that those develop. But the agreement that I have with my wife is that he is going to be raised in the church, but he is not going to be raised exclusively in the church. In other words, he will be getting a lot of information from me as well about other things. And she's fine as well, you know, occasionally taking him to, you know, a Buddhist temple mm-hmm. or taking him to, you know, taking him around to different places and letting him get this exposure and letting him make up his own mind. And right. she's very much on board with that. And I'm very much on board with that. And as far as magic goes, that there's no way he's going to escape that living with me.
Right.
I'm going to be very big on, you know, taking him out into the woods and sort of showing him, you know, this is how you identify these plants and animals, because I do that a lot mm-hmm. anyway. I don't know if this is more for our audience than for you. There are some movies by a director called Hayao Miyazaki, who does Kiki's Delivery Service, My Neighbor Totoro, Spirited Away, things like that, in which there's this sort of recognition that there are spirits all around you.
Mm-hmm.
There are spirits in nature all around you, especially. And you just have to be reverent.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm kind of trying to instill in him, is the sense of reverence for the world seen and unseen around him. And if I can get that across, whatever else comes through is fine.
Gotcha.
So
I think it's a pretty good attitude to have.
Yeah. I don't really want to indoctrinate him. I just right. Want him to be a good
exactly.
person.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the word I was trying to stay away from when I was yeah. in trouble with that question.
Yeah, no, it's not a, yeah. And I don't think she's trying to indoctrinate him either, other than she wants him to have this background of Christian upbringing. Partially, it's really funny, partially just because it's good discipline in the sense that it teaches your children how to sit still for an hour. You know? You learn how to be quiet and sit in the pew and color in a book, and that's it.
That's
and it's
horrible.
A good skill to have. You know, because a lot of people, like, I don't want to sound awful about this, but I know, you know, there are definitely some pagan parents out there who will just let their kids run wild, you mm-hmm. know, and it's very much like a, be who you are, we want you to be free in your personality, and I get that, because, you know, they're probably coming from a background where they were not allowed that, but I also think there are times when your children should probably just sit down and color in a book and eat Play-Doh and do so quietly. We'll see you in an hour and a half. Mommy and Daddy are going to go do their taxes in the bedroom, you know? And that's what you want in life, is that ability to trust your children are not going to, you know,
eat the cat?
Yes. Or try to microwave the cat or whatever Lord. They would choose to do.
Next question.
What about how to tell another magical practitioner? How do we identify them in our community? I know, it, for my part, you know, obviously I look for the pagan bling and all that. And then,
right.
But generally speaking, honestly, anymore, that doesn't necessarily make me want to talk to someone.
No.
So how do we determine? We determined that we were people we wanted to talk to.
Well,
how do we do that?
I remember when that night at the restaurant when you first said, "Oh, well, you know, I'm pagan," and I said, "Me too," and we were really excited. I said, I can't believe it. I have never met a male pagan who was not covered in fur and calling himself
Lord Athel's wife or something.
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to say most, but some men take it and sort of run with it into
mm-hmm.
fairy tale land.
Yeah.
And you are very normal. You know, you're mostly in button downs and khakis. And,
yeah.
You know, you have a normal 9-to-5 job. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that that's necessary. I'm just saying it was a refreshing change.
Yeah. And I mean, and on Lane's part, it's, she's not, you know, decked out in gobs of black eyeliner with the, you know, the Elvira hairdo or, you know, and she doesn't look like, you know, someone that fell out of the craft. You know?
Right.
It's very normal people. And that's something that I think we've gotten across before is mm-hmm. that we're normal folks. But so how do we, I mean, but there was something that connected us that we mm-hmm. knew. Like you said, you know, there was something that, you know, the dance naked under a full moon, boom, set off an alarm for both of us. We're like, okay, there's something to talk about.
Right.
So how do we do that?
I don't know. I think it's just intuition. It's just there.
It doesn't work. My academic mind doesn't understand that.
Because, but, you know, I will say, though, my gaydar is horrible. Mm-hmm. And my, what, paydar? Pagandar? Yeah. I don't know. Whatever it would be called. Mine.
Your paydar?
Anyway, my gaydar is horrible, as is the pagan equivalent.
Yes. Which star? I don't know.
Who knows? But it's, I'm not very good at telling until, like, I get some sort of little hint or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, like, what constitutes a hint for you?
Jeez, I don't know. Outside of, like, going to, you know, a specific group or, you know, like a pride day or something
like
that.
Like, if you know that you're going into that situation. Right. See, like, you're going to a magical shop.
Right, of course. Safe bet.
There is something. I remember you telling me about one of the first girls that you learned all this from.
Mm-hmm.
The way you knew it was you saw a book that she had.
Right.
And that's something I do, is constantly look at what people are reading. I'm a horrible, horrible over-the-shoulder guy until I can figure out what you're reading.
Right.
And that's something I will always do. That's one of the ways I know, is if I see something, I'm like, oh, they're reading Robert Graves' The White Goddess.
I don't really go looking that much. It's just, I was solitary for a while. Mm-hmm. So it never occurs to me to you know, to seek people out or to really practice that much in, like, in public or with other people that much.
Hmm. So, that's interesting.
Unless I'm really familiar with them.
Right.
Like with you or with, you know, my group of friends that I still have.
Right. And even our working is not public. I mean, it's definitely done like behind closed doors and all that. Mm-hmm. And the other group I'm with, we do, I won't call them public. We're in public parks a lot of times, things like that. They're not necessarily large group rituals, but they're more public. That kind of brings me into the next topic, which is a mainstreaming of all this. Mm-hmm. Do you think that witchcraft or Wicca or paganism or any of those topics should be mainstream? Should they be accepted by society? Should there be protections in the law for them?
Well, it's interesting because I sort of feel two ways about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I definitely believe there should be laws and everything, you know, for protection and, you know, for saying, oh, well, you know, I need to take a day off today. It's a holiday for me, even though it's not for you and maybe for me, you know, something like that. But if witchcraft gets too mainstream, it almost takes away some of the mystery and the appeal of witchcraft for me.
You like it to be sort of an underground religion.
Right. Exactly.
Or underground practice.
I don't know why. That just appeals to me, I guess.
I think that's fair. I've heard a couple of people. Peter Padden on The Crooked Path used to talk about how he really didn't like this mainstreaming of these religions because he the way he put it was he would be just as happy to see the old witchcraft laws come back because then it would get rid of all the posers and only the people who were really dedicated would stick with it.
But see, it almost makes me a hypocrite because, you know, if it wasn't so mainstream, I probably wouldn't have been able to get into it so easily. Mm-hmm. And who knows where I'd be now.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point.
So it's a double-edged sword, you know?
Do you think you would have had the same inklings? Like, you would have had the same, like, desire to explore something alternative?
Yes.
Something with a little magic to it?
Yes, definitely.
Mm.
Magic just intrigues me so much.
Me too. It's an awesome thing.
Like, even as a fictional thing, like in movies, you know, it just always leaves me wanting more. I just always want to know more about it. It's very intriguing.
No, I totally feel you. Like, I remember when I saw Willow when I was a kid, I memorized the spells that he said. Like,
really?
What was it? Lochtwar Dan Alora, Tuwatha Danu, Tuwatha Tuwatha, Snakstanu. I can still remember spells from that movie.
Right.
Granted, I saw that maybe 18 times in the theater.
Aww.
Big nerd. Big nerd.
You were
alert.
So cute, I'm sure.
Well, my brother worked at the movie theater, so I saw it for free all those times.
A little better.
It's a little bit better. Yeah, so it was... I can totally understand, like, you see magic and you're just, oh, that's what I want some of that.
Mm-hmm. Something about it just kind of calls to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it's sort of off topic, but I think some Christians feel that, some very conservative Christians, and that's what scares them. And that's what they don't like about it, is that they feel the pull and they think it's demonic or evil or satanic when it's not.
Right. They treat it as a temptation as opposed to
as a
gift or a calling.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I can totally see that.
So that's just an observation I have, though.
It's interesting. I don't know. I kind of ride that fence a little bit, too. I like the protections that are built into the Constitution that say, you know, everyone has the right to freely worship as they will. And basically everything that it comes down to is, so long as you're not impinging upon the rights of others, mm-hmm. Or impinging upon the safety and welfare of others, you're pretty well free to do what you want to do as far as religious or spiritual practice. And I kind of like that. At the same time, I agree. There's this watering down thing that can happen if you let something get too big, mm-hmm. Especially religiously. It tends to develop hierarchies. It tends to develop dogma. Mm-hmm. And this is not the kind of a place for that.
Well, I think it helps that witchcraft does not have a singular book that it goes off of. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no ancient grimoire that we all take our spells from. Oh, you know?
You didn't get it?
What? No.
I mailed your copies weeks ago.
But I think that's an important difference to look at when you're talking about witchcraft and, mm-hmm. and its followers.
I don't know. It's an interesting point, you know.
We don't have any gods that have written books.
No. No, that's an excellent point.
Most others do. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we sort of take on the god-like role in mm-hmm. our religion when others don't. So maybe that's why. But
right, we write our own holy book.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, we instead of... Well, I would argue that spellcasting is a form of prayer. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't necessarily pray in the traditional way that you normally think of, or at least that Christians think of, you know, just saying, oh, like, help me do this. And then you just sort of leave it at that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think if God wills it, then so shall it be. Mm-hmm. Well, with us, we don't take that. We say, well, you know, well, we're going to will it too. And we're going to help ourselves and mm-hmm. see how it works out. You know, and if it doesn't, then it probably wasn't meant to be. Mm-hmm. But we still want to help it along as much as possible. And, yeah, I think that's a key difference. With mm. us. So maybe that's why I know gods have written books, because mm-hmm. we write our own.
They know better. They know we'll just muck it up if they try to let us do it for them. So.
Exactly.
So we just do our own. All right. Well, okay, so real quick to wrap up, can you give me your top three pros and top three cons of in versus out?
Mm. Lord, okay. Being in, it's easier.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you don't have people talking about you or... You know, like, you can just let people assume and go about your business.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
I don't know. I never had a chance to think about this.
On the spot. Yeah. Make it up.
Cons. Let's see.
Well, I'll tell you what. While you're thinking of your con, I'll try to do my first pro of being out.
Okay.
First pro of being out is can go and do work for others without fear of judgment or reprisal. There's this ability to, like, more or less, you can have clients, you know, as a witch, you could have clients, you can have people that you work for, you work on their behalf, and you don't have to hide behind anything. They know exactly what they're getting into.
But I would argue that I could have, you know, quote unquote clients as well. I just might not use my real name, which I would like to say, Lane, it's not my real name. You know, like, just hoping my mom would never find out about it. Like, I don't really mind about anybody else knowing that's friend-wise. Most mm-hmm. of my friends do know. Mm-hmm. But it's mostly family I worry about.
Mm. No, I can understand that. I mean, I should go ahead and say that, like, I was not out to my mother before she passed away.
Right.
I was really close to being out at that point, but she passed away a couple of months before I was really open with who I was. I did tell my father before he passed away, several years before he passed away. And it was funny. I left him a note that morning saying, Dad, we really need to talk. And
drugs.
So, yes. And so I came home that night and he just had this horrified, worried expression on his face. I sat down and I said, Dad, I'm a pagan. He goes, oh, thank God. Oh, I thought you were going to tell me you were doing hard drugs. I'm like, no, Dad. Just rollicking naked under the full moon. So... And he was fine with it. I gave him a copy of Truth About Witchcraft Today, which mm-hmm. he promptly loaned to his minister. And I'm sure that wound up in a book burning pile somewhere. But
oh, Lord.
It was fine. There was never a great deal of animosity. And after he passed, my stepmother and little brother, I feel like they knew at one point, but they seem to have completely forgotten by now. Mm-hmm. And I just don't.
You don't bring it up
again. It never comes up. If it came up, I absolutely would tell them. I have mm-hmm. no... no problems with it. I kind of want to tell my little brother, but bless him, he's just, I don't think he'd quite understand it yet.
Mm-hmm. That's so, how I am with my little brothers.
Yeah.
Not that they're really that little anymore, but...
No, mine's legally an adult, actually. Right. So.
Both mine are, too. It's scary. But anyway.
I know. I don't want to think about that. All right. Well, what about your number two pro for being in the closet?
The secrecy aspect I was talking about. You know, it kind of feels good to not have everyone know. You know, it just helps that... you know, some people argue, like, the more you tell...
Mm-hmm.
The less power your magic has.
Mm, yes, I actually agree with that quite a lot.
I do too. I mean, you know, if you tell non-believers, that sounds silly, but, you know, you get that look and you feel that vibe just rolling off them and you're like, oh, I shouldn't have said anything. I would also kind of see that as one of my cons as well as being in because, you know, I really would like the feeling of, okay, I can be me around this person and it won't matter.
And that's my number two pro is that I can, you know, I can leave my witchcraft books out. I can leave dolls and stuff around the house. And I don't leave them out intentionally trying to be like, look at these. It's very much the secrets in plain sight for me.
That's the other thing that bothers me. It feels like if I'm out too much, like you know, that's why I don't ever bring it up. Like if someone asks me, I'll tell them that I feel comfortable telling them to. I don't want to not lose my magic. That sounds silly. Just I don't want to lose... that little bit of secrecy, you know? Like, while it would feel freeing, at the same time, I don't want to...
It might also feel entrapping, because all of a sudden, that's all they're going to see you as.
Yeah.
I can see that. But number three on your pros or cons?
I don't know. What about you?
I'll do a con. I'll do the biggest con to being out of the broom closet is that you're constantly having to be out of the broom closet again and again and again. Anytime you have a new encounter with somebody, at some point it's going to come up and you have to be prepared for the fact that some people can't deal with that. And that you also have to be prepared to hit. This is kind of a mix of a pro and a con. You have to have a really good sense of humor to be out of the broom closet.
Right.
If you're not going to have a sense of humor, please, please stay in the broom closet. Please. No, not for you, Lane. I know you're fine. You have a sense of humor. But there are lots of folks that come out of the broom closet and make it, you know, flag and banner. And
that's what I was trying to say. Woo. When I forgot and my thoughts just left me. I don't want it to seem like I'm being flashy or I'm doing it for attention or I'm being this way for any particular reason other than it feels right to me. You know, I don't want people to go, oh, yeah, you know, like, it's like my friend's sister when she said, oh, it's just a face, you know, oh, you guys have just watched The Craft too much. No, it's not it, you know.
Right, but if you tell somebody that, that's what you're afraid they're going to say.
Exactly.
It's less, you're less afraid of them saying you're going to go to hell than them saying, oh, really?
Yeah, it's like the dismissive tone that would hurt more, I think. And I get that. I feel that less now that I'm out of high school and I'm an adult and people take my decisions more seriously now. And especially because I have the years that I've practiced behind me.
Yeah.
When, like, at 16, oh, yeah, I've been doing it for 3 months, you know.
Right.
No.
Nobody's going to buy it, especially.
Which I understand. I mean, even now, like, 16-year-olds who say, oh, I want to be a witch. You know, even now, like, even though I started when I was 16, I'm still like, I don't know, sweetie. We'll see.
There's that impulse to be like, yeah, you come back to me 5 years down the road and we'll see where you are. And then we can talk. And I definitely feel that. So there seems to be this sect of witches out there whose sole purpose in being witches is to be professionally offended.
Yeah.
And I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really good friends with a friend of mine who's obviously he's a friend of mine if I'm really good friends with him. Woo!
We're tired. Yeah. It's late.
It's late. Anyway, I'm friends with a very Catholic man who also happens to be gay, so he's got a sense of humor built in there as well.
Right. You'd have to be.
Yeah, but I mean, we constantly tease each other whenever he would go to his Ash Wednesday service. He would always talk about the little ash cross that they put on his forehead, and he'd be like, those are the pagan babies from last year. And I'd be like, oh, good, you got our shipment. So, you know, it's one of those things where you just kind of have to take things with a grain of salt and be really, you know, be a little irreverent and be a lot funny and be okay with be okay with having a few jabs poked at you, because if you're going to be out of the closet and you're not going to be okay with that, oh, you're just going to be stressed constantly.
Yeah. See, that's the other thing. I do stress a lot about it. To this day, I stress about my mom calling me, and somehow she has found out, and I'm, mm-hmm. And she's going to disown me, and it just, it breaks my heart to think about that. I don't want to think about that. So one of the main reasons, just don't tell her. Mm-hmm. She doesn't need to know.
Yeah, need no basis, I understand. I think we've covered that topic, and I'd hope we have time enough for our guest at some point in this show.
I'll have to cut it down.
Yeah, we're going to be trimming this down a little bit. If you're hearing this, maybe we didn't trim it down enough. So that's it for being in and out of the closet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Lane.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm J.O. Scully, host of Witchery of One, a podcast that focuses on the experiences, practices, and opinions of one witch, me. Shows for download can be found on my blog page, which is witcheryofone.libsyn.com, or do a search on iTunes. All blessings be.
Hi, and welcome back. I have with us on the line Sarah, the Witch of Forest Grove, who runs the Forest Grove Botanica up in British Columbia, and is also the proprietress of the site Hedge Folk Tales. It is a wonderful new podcast. I thoroughly recommend checking it out. And it's basically I'll let her kind of explain that. Sarah, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Corey.
Well, welcome to New World Witchery.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I'll go ahead and start off with Hedge Folk Tales. Can you explain that a little bit to our audience?
Well, the subtitle kind of gives it away, the old tales for modern heathens. So my idea is to tell old stories, including myths and folk tales, and then dissect them a little bit and analyze them and explain what they actually mean and how you can apply them to your modern practice.
And that's what I think makes it so unique, is that it's specifically witchcraft oriented.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's not too much of that. There's a lot of storytelling, but there's not a lot of what it means. And I think that's important, because a lot of pagans like to read stories and folk tales, but they don't understand how to take meaning out of it that they can use themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's so much embedded in so many of these old tales. It's really great stuff. So
thank you.
And I'm really excited to hear the next episode as well.
Should be a good one.
Can you give us any hints about what it'll be?
Yes, I'm going to do the fall from the garden.
Oh, yes. Oh, you did mention that at the end.
Yes. So I'm going to be explaining those myths, why we fell from the garden, how the Garden of Eden story in the Bible is actually not Christian. It's actually much older. And I'm going to cover the meaning and what original sin actually means.
Awesome. Awesome. As a massively lapsed Catholic, I will be very interested in that show.
There won't be a whole lot of Catholicism in there, so it'll be pretty shocking to some people who will be expecting Christianity.
Are you going to be eating apples and drinking pomegranate wine while you do this particular show?
And laugh evilly, possibly.
Fantastic. I love it. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about, you are, from what I understand, you're a professional, root worker, professional witch.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how you got there.
That's a long story. I'll try and make it nice and short.
Okay.
When I discovered root work and hoodoo, I fell in love. But I had come from a Scottish-Irish background, mm-hmm. and hoodoo and root work are more American and African-oriented, as well as a little bit of Native American. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't quite sure what to do with that. But the more that I researched my own practice, the more I realized it does have root work within it. And so I decided, well, why don't I start making stuff? And I fell in love with that as well, making oils and flying ointments and magical powders, like all the kinds of supplies that you can need for your magic. And I just had so much stuff everywhere that I couldn't use up. I figured, well, I might as well open a botanica and sell it.
That's a good choice. And and your wares are fantastic. I've seen especially the stuff that you can't get anywhere else. Some of your runes and your carved items are just stellar. They're beautiful.
Thank you. I hope to get a lot more done soon. It's been a long time since I've carved. Mm. for the root work, I do a lot of my own wildcrafting too. So it's not like I'm just buying herbs from a store. Mm-hmm. I actually go out into the woods and harvest everything and talk to the spirits of the plants. Mm. And then come home and dry them and prepare them all by hand. Oh. So everything is completely handmade. Like, I'm old school hardcore.
So, okay, you said that you have a background in Scottish witchcraft.
Yes.
And I know that you also are initiated into the Vichia line.
Vichia, yes. Vichia. It's a line of the fairy tradition that mm-hmm. was founded by Victor and Cora Anderson.
Can you tell us just a little bit about that? Kind of give us sort of a general idea of what that is?
Okay, well, the fairy tradition, as the general of all the different lines are called, because it's just like a Wiccan coven where there's different lines or lineages within the same tradition. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like what fairy is. Fairy is the overall, and Vichia is one specific line, and it is the Andersons' personal line. So it is their direct initiates and students, and the students of their students.
Oh, okay.
So it's a very small, tight-knit group of people that just interact and train with each other. We're not a coven. We are more just a teaching group.
Okay.
Kind of like a family, I would say.
That's an interesting way to put it, and I like that. I like that very much.
Yeah.
And now, did the Scottish craft come in with doing the Vichia, or is that something that's much more personal to you?
It's personal to me, but it is a part of Vichia. Victor was a syncretist, so when he taught students, he encouraged them to seek out their own heritage or culture they were obsessed with. Mm-hmm. So he didn't force you to learn what his heritage was. He would teach it to you if you wanted, but he would also encourage you to seek out your own. So you can take the practices of your cultural heritage and apply them to Vichia teachings.
Okay. That makes sense.
It's really neat. It's really interactive, I guess is a good word. It's not strict and restrictive. Things change and evolve. They stay within the body of lore, but things aren't expected to stay static.
That's good to know. Okay, so as a professional witch, you live up in British Columbia, sort of in the wilds up there.
Yes, right? On my mountain.
Yes, I'm sure you're sick of people seeing people in like sequin bodysuits wearing numbers at this point. up there, I don't know if you're getting a lot of the Olympians, but
well, there's a lot of propaganda and advertising, but I haven't seen anyone running around in sequins.
Okay. but I know that landscape has a lot of magic sort of embedded in it anyway. How does that shape your magic?
Well, I was born here and raised here, and my father was an RCMP officer. So I moved maybe once every 1 or 2 years within British Columbia. So I experienced the entire province, which is incredibly huge compared to American states. And it has every different climate you could possibly imagine here. Like, there are deserts, there are rainforests, there is deep wilderness, there's Arctic areas. It's pretty crazy. So living in all these different areas, in small towns, in absolute wilderness, on farms, I got attached to it. I absolutely love it here. The mountains, the ocean, the wildlife. I can't compare it to anything else. I moved away for 5 years out east, mm-hmm. and it's beautiful out there. You live out there, so you know that.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't the same, right? It wasn't home. So mm-hmm. I came back. The land actually called me, and when I came home, it felt like home, and I just can never leave again. There's so much magic here.
Are there specific spirits that you know are... They're British Columbian spirits, basically, and they want you there?
I don't know if they want me here, but they're nice to me. in the local native legends, there's a lot of spirits that dwell here, and they were believed in just 50 years ago. So everything's still really fresh here. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been trampled out. So when you call the spirits here, they're still alive and very powerful. Mm-hmm. And so you really don't want to mess with them. Most of them are pretty scary, especially the ones that live in the wilderness and in the ocean. So you have to approach them really respectfully and have offerings. Mm-hmm. You really can't just jump into it.
That's a good idea anywhere, I think, to be honest.
Yeah. But you gotta know who you're approaching before you try and talk to them.
Yeah, and always carry a flask of some sort of fire water with you.
Well, that's another thing, though. They didn't have alcohol here. So alcohol is considered an inappropriate offering.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, yeah, that's very not
Southern. You have to be really careful. Like, you can give alcohol to trees, but if you try and give it to one of the big land spirits, you can actually offend them. So it's really good to do your research where the land is under your feet before you attempt to work with the local spirits.
Yeah, that's very different than how it is, you know, around here. You know, I live, this may be giving away too much information about my location, but I live within a stone's throw of a very specific distillery.
Does it happen to be Jim Beam, perhaps? Or,
no, it is another fellow with a J first name.
I'm sure there's a lot of whiskey and bourbon offerings where you are.
Exactly, yeah, and it seems to be that's the sort of de rigueur offering in this area is some sort of whiskey. Now, as we were saying, you do root work and hoodoo, which I know is very, it's a very Southern, well, it's not just a Southern phenomenon, but it's got a lot of roots here in the South. And so when you transfer that sort of practice up to British Columbia, how do you keep it sort of true to its roots while still practicing it in some place that's so far away from where it started?
Well, I take the ideas behind it. So the ways that you would prepare herbs and the methods that you would use them for. But instead of using the Southern herbs, I use local ones. So I learn their local properties from either the natives or from research, and then I apply that to my own work. So I'm not looking up a reference encyclopedia like Cunningham's because he doesn't have the local plants. So I have to do it all on my own. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's worth it because I think there's more power in working with plants that you have a relationship with, mm-hmm. that have a vested interest in you and your well-being, and that they leave their power in the pieces that you take home so that you're actually working with their spirits, not just a dead, dry plant. Mm-hmm. So for me, that has a lot more power than ordering a plant from Europe.
Oh, yes. I can definitely see that. I mean, unless you are a European traditional practitioner working
on American soil. I do work with some European plants, but I don't just buy them and use them. I actually perform magic with them before to call the spirit back to them, because I know when they were harvested, they weren't harvested in a way that a traditional witch like me would have done.
Oh, now that's interesting. The calling the spirits. That's something I actually had not ever encountered before.
Well, whenever I make an oil or even a healing ointment, I always call the spirits of the plants back to them.
Interesting. And can you give me kind of a basic idea of how you would do that? Or is that sort of topic?
There's different methods. A traditional method would be to sing. You'd sing them a song or a chant. And even older method is just to leave them in the sunlight. For a full day or a full week. And some plants are more moon-oriented, so I'll leave them out during a specific moon phase instead. Just to soak it up. Like, I'll actually leave them outside.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I'm totally doing the singing, especially, because I've done the singing for sort of the tapping the bone kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that makes total sense to me. I'd never thought of it for plants. That's fantastic.
It's, and especially in the local native shamanism, it was very traditional. Even if you were just picking berries, they would sing to the plant and ask permission first. Not even ask permission sometimes. Sometimes they would just sing to let it know what they were doing. Like, don't worry, I'm just going to take some of your bark. You know, don't freak out. That's pretty much what their songs were if you translate them into English.
That's great. Yeah, please don't eat me kind of thing.
Exactly. Please don't curse me or kill me. I'm just taking a little bit. It's not going to hurt you. Yeah. That kind of thing. You know, just say it in your own words. You can make it flowery or not. It's mm-hmm. What matters is that you're actually saying it out loud to the plant.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I know that some of the ingredients that you've used in your work are very specific to BC, as you've said. I've seen some that there's a type of fern, I think, that's very local to you.
You're talking about the St. John's hand. That's not local. It's ferns are everywhere. The actual use of the St. John's hand is actually from Europe and Asia.
Oh, okay.
So I just took the local fern and applied it with the same use.
Oh, okay.
So there's similar species here, because ferns are found worldwide.
Right. And it looked like it's kind of the same species. It looked like it was sort of a fiddlehead of some kind.
Yes. Some of them are fiddleheads. They have different powers, different parts of the fern. So the root is a charm. That's the St. John's hand. It's the root. Mm-hmm. And you would use that for an incredible protection charm. Mm-hmm. And the fiddlehead you harvest in early spring, and you dry them out really carefully. And those are used for rain magic or fertility magic, especially male virility.
Mm-hmm. Do you use I know that in some European traditions, the spores are used for invisibility spells.
Yes, you rub them on your eyelids to see fairies, etc. So you could be invisible, I suppose, because technically you would be in the fairy realm.
Yeah, that would make sense. And I mean, it could also be that, you know, if you've got all that stuff in your eyes, you're wandering off in the forest and no one sees you for a long time. That's invisibility.
Probably not.
As far as how you started in witchcraft in general, how did you discover that you were a witch?
I think it was when I was a kid. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and there's this one book I just kept taking out from the school library over and over and over, and that was The Witch's Handbook by Malcolm Bird.
And I love that one. With the little witchy illustrations and like the pointy. Oh, I love it. I love it.
But I didn't realize it until a few years ago. I bought a secondhand copy out of, you know, just sentimentality. Mm-hmm. And I read it, and I realized there's real witchcraft lore in it. Mm-hmm. Like not fake lore or neo-paganism, like old school traditional witchcraft lore. So I was blown away. I was like, this is the book I read like 30 times in a month. And it definitely shaped who I became. So me and my sister, we used to write these little spells, and we had our little dolls. We would play witches and write rain spells, and mm-hmm. we would use nursery rhymes as spells. And it turns out most nursery rhymes actually were spells. So
yeah, that worked out great, I'm sure, actually.
And because I lived on Native reservations growing up, there was a strong tradition of storytelling. And so I was raised with all kinds of folklore and fairy tales and folk tales and oral storytelling. And it really had an impression on me as a child. And so when I moved out of home when I was 18 and I went to college, my first roommate ever was a witch. And then when I moved into my next place, my next roommate was a witch. First guy I ever dated was a witch. Didn't know beforehand.
So
I just kept meeting all these witches, and eventually I was like, okay, I'm going to take the hint here. I'm going to look into this. Because I thought witches were fairy tale creatures, like unicorns, right? I didn't think people could be witches. I thought they were some kind of magical creature that lived for hundreds of years.
Right.
I don't know why. But when I finally researched it, I was like, oh my God, people are actually witches.
Yeah.
I could be a witch. Maybe I am a witch. So before I even realized this, I had started practicing folk magic, simple candle magic, like lighting candles on the full moon to bless my family,
mm-hmm.
and collecting plant lore for the garden. And I did this before I knew anything about witchcraft. So when I finally started reading, it all clicked in my head, and I dove right into it full force, started going to public pagan moots and rituals, meeting other pagans. I even flew across the country to meet pagans, say hello, have fun. And it just kind of escalated from there. And I ended up joining a tradition and joining a ritual group. And now I am where I am today. And Mojo just came home. So
hi, Mojo.
Good morning.
And, I should mention, Sarah is also the pagan bookworm, who you probably have heard a few times on the Wiggling Way. And her wonderful and fantastic hubby is Mojo.
Yes. So. Mojo of the Wigglian Way.
Yes. Do we have to say that in unison? Should we try that again in unison? Mojo of the Wigglian? I can't even begin.
You can't do it.
No, I'm terrible at it. Okay. What about you were talking about some of the things you did when you were younger, spells-wise. Do you remember the first spell you did as a witch that it worked and you just went, oh, there's something really to this?
Yes, and this was before I knew anything as well. I had been having a lot of stress with finishing school and the job that I was working at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was big issues coming up, and I was really anxious and stressed out. So I wrote down all of my worries and anxiety on a piece of paper, and then I wrote down what I wanted to happen, so everything to work out. And then I burned it in the fireplace, and I let it go, and I forgot about it. And exactly what I had written down, how I wanted it to work out, it did. And that's when I went, oh, there's something to this.
There's always that revelatory moment, I think.
Yes.
Now, what sort of things do you think it takes to be a witch? I know that, for example, you've written some blog posts on your fantastic, fantastic blog about witchcraft. It's not always a pretty or safe sort of practice.
No.
So can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Okay, well, I want to start off by saying I think there's a big difference between being a pagan and being a witch.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people that call themselves witches are actually pagans.
Mm-hmm.
As in, they are lay pagans, meaning they are religious and spiritual people
mm-hmm.
who may go to rituals and be in a group, but they are not like a shaman type or a priest type.
Right. They're there for the potluck and the dancing around the fire, but
and the celebratory spiritual aspects of it. Mm-hmm. They aren't there for the role of the shaman.
Mm-hmm.
For me, witch equals shaman, because if you look at the Proto-Indo-European root of witch, stemming from Wicca, which is actually pronounced witche,
mm-hmm.
it actually means shaman.
Mm.
And in the same essence of what shaman means, a mystical practitioner with specific abilities. So for me, witch and shaman are synonymous.
Okay.
So that's just where I'm coming from. So in order to be a witch or shaman, you have to be initiated.
Okay.
And there's two different kinds. You can be initiated by the spirits, or you can be initiated by a group. However, if you're initiated by a group, the group is just there to support you while you are initiated by the spirits.
Ah, so there's really only one kind with many different forms.
But it's not recommended to ever do it alone, because that's how you end up crazy.
Right. There's the rock, I think, in Ireland that if you sit out all night on it, you wake up either a madman or a poet.
Yes, there's actually a lot of legends about that for fairy mounds and mountains, threshold places. That's found in more than just the Irish lore, too.
Oh.
They believe that if you seek to be initiated by the spirits or be gifted powers by them, if you do not approach them properly, they will either make you a poet, a madman, or a scholar. So, and another theory is that they will make you a shaman or a poet or a madman.
Mm. Yeah, I personally don't see a huge difference between poet and shaman sometimes.
No, the whole bard aspect is an intrinsic part.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So, I guess to be a witch, it's not just the initiation, it's also the idea of being a mystic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, reading a book isn't good enough to be a shaman or a witch.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have experiential wisdom. You have to be able to tap in to the greater universe. And it sounds a little new agey, but it's true. Everything in the entire universe, down to the greatest star, to the tiniest little microorganism, are all connected and made of the same material.
Mm-hmm.
So as a witch or a shaman, you have to be aware of it and be a part of it. And once you are able to retain and take knowledge and wisdom right out of it, and bring it back down to earth and use it and tell it to people. So the shamans of old, they were considered mystics because they would visit the gods and the spirits, and they would bring back laws and ethics and magical practices and mm-hmm. healing remedies. They would bring back all kinds of knowledge and wisdom that the people wouldn't have had on their own.
There's the spirit medicines and things like that.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. pretty much, it's the wisdom of the universe and the gods. So it's not that the magic just comes from the witch. It comes from the spirits and the universe and the world around them. There's innate power within you, but you're using power from things outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's, I think, a very unique perspective that you have as far as witchcraft goes, because I know that there are a lot of people who treat witchcraft as kind of a psychological exercise.
Yes, that's kind of a pet peeve of mine. Part of it is psychology. Like, magic doesn't work if you don't believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll exist regardless if you believe in it or not. Everything is magic to me. From the sunrise to an animal being born to spring coming back every year. To me, that is magic.
Mm-hmm.
There's no explanation for it. It just happens.
And likewise, it's something I really respect about your craft and practice. There are things that are unpleasant that are just as much magic to you.
Yes, like, you need to accept your own darkness before you can move ahead. Because people don't realize it, but a lot of modern witches have this idea that if we just shove everything dark and unseemly under the rug and in a corner and don't look at it, it's not there. And we don't have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. We're just going to exclude that from our practice and not worry about it. That's like taking all the negative cards out of the tarot deck and just reading with the good ones. It's not balanced.
Right.
So for me to be a good witch, not as in a white witch, but as in a, a knowledgeable and functioning witch, you have to have a good balance between the bright and the dark. And yeah. You have to be able to take lessons from the dark.
Yes, absolutely. You have to be able to. You have to be willing to get a little dirt under your nails to do that, yes, too, I think.
Yes, you got to get your hands dirty. Mm-hmm. Sometimes your mind, too.
Yeah. And then in... I know in a lot of witchcraft traditions, there's a strong connection not only to spirits, but to ancestors. Is that a part of your practice as well?
Definitely, I would say so. The spirits of the dead, as in not just family members that have died, but my ancestors going back to the beginning of time. So I believe that as a witch shaman, you need to work with your ancestors and acknowledge them because they have been there before you and they've experienced life and they have a lot more knowledge and wisdom than you do about life. And so you can learn more from the dead than you can from the living in most cases. Mm-hmm. Another wonderful thing about working with ancestors is necromancy. It's not a dirty word. People think it means necrophilia or raising the dead from their graves.
It's not making zombies, that's for sure.
It's not zombie making. It's a metaphor. And what you're actually doing in necromancy is communing with the dead for divination. Mm-hmm. Because it's believed that the dead are not restricted by time, meaning they can look into the past, present, or future without any blockages. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know something about your future, you would ask the dead because they can just look and see. But if you ask certain spirits, then they might have no idea. Mm-hmm. So the dead are very useful for divination. Whenever I read tarot, I always call on the ancestors.
Mm-hmm. And now, one thing that a lot of people get hung up on the necromancy aspect of it is that whole, when we say that the dead are very useful, it's not that we're just using the dead once and then throwing that particular person or entity away. It's no. Usually we have a strong relationship
with them. Yes, you must build a really good working relationship with them, as in you don't bring a spirit home without knowing it. Like, it would be like bringing a homeless man into your house. You don't know if he's going to be a nice man or if he's going to kill you and steal all your stuff.
Right.
So when you first start working with a spirit, it's like making a new friend. You approach them slowly and respectfully. You give them gifts. You don't ask for things from them right away. That'd be kind of like if you and I were just made friends, mm-hmm. and I said, okay, well, we're friends now. Can I borrow your car?
Right.
Or can you buy me a new car? You would be like, no, I've only known you for a day, right?
Exactly.
Same thing with the spirits of the dead. You build slowly and you go from there. And eventually you ask them to do little favors and you always give back in return. Mm-hmm. So you always leave them an offering. And the bigger the request you make to them, the bigger the offering.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when people have ancestor worship, like for instance, the Chinese, mm-hmm. they have constant offerings. So for instance, they would have an altar for their dead relatives and they would have incense lit for them. But as soon as the incense was going to go out, they would relight it and they would do this all day, every day for their entire lives.
Mm.
Now, most modern pagans aren't going to do that.
Right. No, I'm happy. I feel good about myself that I, you know, take a day a week and sit down and do my altar. So yes.
In that specific culture, there is also a fear of the dead,
mm-hmm.
which is very common in ancient pagan cultures as well. The fear that if you do not appreciate them, they will take away the good luck they give you. So if you do not respect your elders and your ancestors, they will no longer aid you. Like, you may think that you just have a golden horseshoe up your ass and life is all sunshine. But as soon as you offend your ancestors or your spirit guides, they take it away and everything goes to hell. And you'll go, why? Why is everything going wrong for me? It's because you've offended some spirit that you work with. Whether you're knowledgeable that they are with you or not.
Because you didn't put the golden horseshoe up there in particular. Yeah, that's great. Well, I think that about covers everything I wanted to talk about. Is there anything that you would like to discuss that you've been, you know, itching to get out there in the world?
Oh, dear. well, I'm working on a new project.
Oh, do tell.
Yes, I am working with a friend of mine to create an Ogam deck. So she had an artist commissioned to do the artwork for it a long time ago. She wrote the system and the book for it about 10 years ago.
Wow.
And so now we're updating it, and I'm doing a whole new deck for her. And we hope to publish this one. The previous one was never published. So I've just bought all my supplies, and I've started on the first one. So I hope to have it finished within a year.
Excellent.
It should be good. She's a hardcore research snob in the best of ways.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I adore her. Just reading her booklet, I went, of course I will do this. I love you. I would use this deck myself.
You also, I know, mentioned you were working with another friend of yours on a journal that's going to be published biannually.
We hope so, yes. We're having some monetary issues right now.
Ah, okay.
But we hope to just start off with a grassroots folk magic journal. Mostly on American folk magic, but we'll incorporate European as well, because obviously it has influenced American. But we just would like a change, because most of the witchcraft journals and almanacs out there are very European-focused mm-hmm. and very biased towards that.
Right.
Whereas there are so many American witches right now, and they're all discovering these new systems and new methods of magic, and some are even discovering old ones. And it's an amazing, I guess, mixed pot right now in America. And we just want to reflect that and have the witches themselves write articles for their own community.
Yeah. And there's really not a lot of, I mean, there are definitely what I would call community journals, you know, like Penn, I don't even know how they pronounced it.
Pangaea.
Pangaea. You know, they had, and even New Witch were good for community support, sort of, you know, finding out where people were, but there wasn't a whole lot of practical magic, really.
Well, one thing I noticed about them mm-hmm. is that a lot of them are opinion pieces.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of theology, a lot of opinion, not a lot of what I call operative witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's sorely lacking, and it needs to be addressed. So absolutely. That's what we're hoping to do, is present a journal of operative witchcraft.
Oh, I love that idea. I love it. Please do it. Please. I'll be working on articles day and night. Just, I love it.
Oh, that would be lovely.
That's great. Well, all right. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And please check out Sarah's blog and actually blogs. She's got hedgefolktales.com, I believe.
Yes.
And witchofforestgrove.com.
Yes, and there's no funny spelling. They're just like they sound.
Excellent. And then we'll put up links to those on the show notes.
Thank you.
So once again, thank you very much, Sarah, and we really appreciate it.
No problem, Corey. Hope to talk to you again.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Fox.
Hi, I'm Erwin.
And we're Pagan Parents on the Edge. Has your life been a little crazy lately?
Are you standing in line at the bank or the grocery store or DMV? Is your life really hectic lately?
Are the kids too loud? TV too loud? The world getting too loud?
Plug in your earbuds.
And make yourself your favorite beverage.
Join us for conversations about life, as seen from the experiences of two pagan parents.
You can catch us on iTunes, you can catch us at Podbean, you can catch us at Podcast Pickle, and you can catch us on MySpace, where we have a player that you can get the Pagan Parents on the Edge episodes.
We'd love to have you as a listener.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled program.
Hello again, Lane here. You'll notice I wasn't on that interview. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it due to work and staying up too late. I'm a pretty bad insomniac. But anyway, luckily Corey was able to make it. So we just...
That's kind of a boring...
Yeah.
We just want you to talk into a microphone for 45 minutes.
That's what we do.
Well, that's fair enough. There's two of us. It's more interesting.
But anyway, so we just wanted to discuss the interview a little bit and go through some of the things that Sarah brought up. So... Yeah. Let's get started. All right.
How about that? Okay. Well, I know that there are definitely some things that we treat differently than I think she does. Mm-hmm. Probably largely due to regional differences.
Right.
For example, the beliefs of her specific tradition, we didn't get a whole lot on exactly what those beliefs are. You still had some questions on that, didn't you?
I'm still not quite sure what it is. I had never really heard of it until maybe, you know, a couple months ago. And so, yeah, I still don't know what the tradition entails.
Okay. And for that, actually, Sarah did give me a good link for that. I think it's actually on one of our blog roll links. But if you find the Lilith's Lantern link on our page, it will definitely be in the show notes. And that will give you a lot more information on the fairy tradition and Vichia.
Okay, yeah. I'll definitely have to look into that. And you should, too, if you have more questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there were some other things she discussed that I think you had either questions or some different ideas about.
I thought it was interesting how her shamanic approach to witchcraft, mm-hmm. which is very different from how we come at it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because it's different doesn't mean that it's bad or less right. or anything like that.
Right. We can have civil disagreement about exactly how we do our witchcraft. It's not our way or the highway.
I just thought it was, you know, it was just a very new and interesting way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And especially because I think we've already mentioned on the show, we're tending not to do a lot of Native American or First Nations practices and right. beliefs.
And shaman sort of evokes that image for me, mm-hmm. that Native American image. And it from what she said, it doesn't for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's mainly regional.
Right, and I mean, she's
and
coming
cultural.
From, yeah, she's up there in a place where they really did have that native culture up until 50 years ago as a regular part of the daily life.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that she mentioned that was definitely interesting and maybe worth exploring,
mm-hmm.
The difference between pagan and witch.
Yes, I think we should definitely, if not have a podcast about it, at least, you know, get some feedback on it. Leave some comments. You know, what do you think is the difference between pagan and witch? Is there a difference? You know, what do you identify as, you know, I sort of use them interchangeably.
And I tend to use witch as as more vocational and pagan as more religious.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I guess now that you say that, I do too.
Mm.
It's just among other magical folk.
Yes.
It's hard to say pagan or witch now, but among others, you know, that are like-minded, I would use one or the other. But among like lay people who if I'm say just meeting someone and they're like, oh, you know, well, what do you believe? I'll say, oh, I'm pagan. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, for most people who, you know, are Christian or who don't believe that, it's not as harsh as saying witch.
Yeah,
you know, you don't get the pointy hats and the hook nose and the wart.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't, she actually made that physical gesture for everybody who's listening out there. It was adorable. but yeah, there is a definite sort of loaded connotation that goes with that word witch that doesn't necessarily come with the word pagan. Pagan can be fairly widely accepted, mm-hmm. which it is accepted some places and in some places it's just not. Around
right.
here, a lot harder to get people to go along with witch. Wiccan right. is more or less interchangeable with pagan for most people I know, but
not for me.
Not personally, but like most people I know, if they're saying, you know, I'm Wiccan, it means the same thing to them as I'm pagan.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Gotcha. I have a friend who even after years, still says, oh, you know, I'm so glad that, you know, you're my Wiccan friend. I'm like, it's just not worth correcting you at this point. So, yeah.
Another little note I had written is her stance on being initiated. And, you know, she said that she believes to be a true witch, you must be initiated.
Mm-hmm.
Which she goes on to explain that, you know, by either like feeling the calling to it and, you know, by the spirits of,
mm-hmm.
you know, of, I guess, your land or
mm-hmm.
your...
Or your tradition. Either.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or the people in your tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't sound as binding
word, yeah,
that way.
The word calling is a little, feels a little more open than the word initiation. And, you know, that's something that I know a lot of people disagree about,
mm-hmm.
as far as initiations. We'd love to hear from all of you. What do you think, Ari? Do you have to be initiated to be a witch?
Well, see, I mean, some might say, well, you know, my self-initiation is very valid, and I
mm-hmm.
would agree with that. But I think what she was saying, you know, in her defense was that by self-initiating, you know, you were calling on spirits.
Right.
Or
it's not actually a self-initiation. It's
right.
a spiritual initiation.
Exactly.
That you just happen to be doing in the mortal physical plane by yourself.
Right. And Sarah, if, you know, if you're listening to this and you, you know, you need to clarify, please do. And we'll talk more about that next
yes,
podcast.
We'd love to hear from you again. So.
So yeah, if anybody has any questions or comments, please feel free to leave them on the blog and or email us at compassandkey@gmail.com. We'd love your comments and your feedback.
Absolutely. And that blog is newworldwitchery.wordpress.com. And yeah, that's about it for us this week, I think.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed the episode.
I hope so too. And we'll talk to you next time. Be well. New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.